Thanks for listening to Kauai Community Radio. This is Radio Annie, and you're now tuned into Talk Story Radio, and we're going to be connecting with Angela Zussman from Story for All in just a moment, where we have another exciting interview for you this morning. And thanks for tuning in to KKCR. Angela, are you with us? Aloha, Angela. You're on the air. Are you with us?
Good morning. This is Angela.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, or thanks for giving us a call. Thanks to everyone else for tuning in. And thanks for putting this interview together again for us today. You must have had so much fun at the WIPAW Foundation.
Yes, always. That's pretty much a guarantee, fun and inspiration. And this show is a little bit different. It focuses in more on the food of WIPAW, which is so good, everybody, if you haven't tried it. Am I allowed to say that?
I guess so. so where do you, I mean, do you just eat at WIPAW? Like, what do you do?
So WIPAW Foundation, they do so many things. So I'm going to refer everyone to their website, and where you can find out more, and their Instagram, WIPAW Ohana. But they do offer food tours, which is something that's a little bit new. You know, they grow a lot of food on their land that they're caring for. And then they have this amazing kitchen and these amazing recipes where they're really coming up with some really creative recipes that use some of the canoe plants and like kind of bring in some of the Hawaiian cultural traditions and flavors into things like cheesecake, for example, which is one of the things that they're super famous for, is their poi and their cheesecake. So this conversation focuses in, we're speaking with Auntie Bobby, who's one of the cooks over there, has been for years. And so focusing in on how they prepare the food, the recipes that they're using, kind of the cultural significance of some of these foods. So it's just a different look at WIPAW. In previous shows, we've looked at what they're doing in terms of restoring the waterways, taking care of the watershed there, the plants that they're growing, so the youth programs that they have. So it's really, the organization is doing so much for so many people. And it was fun the last couple shows to look at the food that they're producing too, which is part of their mission to keep their community healthy.
I love that. I'm a firm believer that food connects us to culture and brings us understanding of culture, and food is identity. And it sounds like a weird thing to say sometimes, but it's very true. Like when you think about your own ethnic heritage, you think about like your grandma and then food and then maybe music, you know, so it's like an interesting thing. So So I love that WIPAW is doing all that they can to keep all of that alive and thriving with younger generations and for the future too.
Exactly. And we don't talk about it too much in the interview, but WIPAW does offer food tours. I understand that Bon Appetit magazine was just there the other day featuring them and others. And I've been on one of the food tours, and it's really interesting and super, super delicious. I mean, the food is so good. So, you know, if you're just going for the food, fine. Just go for the food, you know. But you're really going to get some interesting stories behind the food and some recipes that are really unique and using some of the foodstuffs that we grow here in really creative and delicious ways.
That is really good. I think, too, it would be interesting for folks that live here to go on a food tour, because, you know, you go to the farmer's market and you see all this weird stuff that like grows wonderfully here, but we don't know what to do with it. It would be wonderful to have lessons to figure out what I should do with these things that I can get in my CSA box or at the farmer's market. So I used to do a lot of education on that tip too. So I think it's very important. So, Angela, you are also...
Did we get to interview you next?
I don't know what I would say.
I love that idea.
I just clammed up.
Welcome back to that.
I usually have so much to say, and I just froze. So, Angela, you started a nonprofit for Story for All. And we talk about this every last Friday of the month, but I just, it never gets old. So tell us what Story for All is.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Story for All is a nonprofit I founded about 15 years ago, really to bring the power of storytelling back into our communities. Storytelling is something that we do naturally, but it's something, too, that if we can create the space to really listen to one another, I think that a lot of healing can occur. You know, it's through stories that we begin to see our points of connection with other people, that we begin to maybe care about things that aren't necessarily happening to us. And that's how I think we can really move past differences and begin to act in more unity with each other, at least more respect. So that's where Story for All is coming from. We do oral history projects. We really love to lift up the voices of folks who have been marginalized and the organizations that support them. So we do storytelling in pretty much every format you can think about, from radio to book publishing to exhibits to curriculum for students. We're just really interested in everybody really telling their stories and listening to other people's stories with an open mind and with respect, whoever you are, wherever you are, whether you're at a dinner table with your family or talking to a stranger or your partner or your kids, or, you know, people from the neighboring communities. We just really want people to think about listening with an open mind and respect, and also acknowledging that everybody has really valuable wisdom and stories to share, every single person, regardless of age. So that's kind of what we're all about.
And I love that. And so here at KKCR, we are grateful for the opportunity to amplify those stories and get them to whatever audience that we can. So thank you.
Thank you for the partnership. We love you guys.
So much. And so now we're going to turn it over to Story for All's interview with Auntie Bobby at WIPA, unless you've got anything else to say, Angela?
No, you can learn more about Story for All at storyforall.org. We're also on Instagram, and we really welcome your questions, your ideas, your comments. If you're here on Kauai and have a story you want to tell or know someone that you think have some stories to share, please let us know.
And that's right. I remember that I have someone that I would love to hear their story that I need to hook you up with. So thank you for that reminder, too. You can also, if you have to jump out of your car or get to an appointment and you miss a part of this story, you can find the archive at kkcr.org/storyforall, and you'll be able to hear it all again. You can look for that next week. So,
perfect.
Thank you so much, and let's get started.
Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the show.
Have a good day. I'm Stacey Sproul, Executive Director of the WIPA Foundation. We're a Hawaiian community-based nonprofit that manages the 1,600-acre ahupua of WIPA. WIPA is the valley just past Hanalei Town on the way to Haena. Our purpose is to be a living learning center, as a space to elevate and share Hawaiian values and practices, and to inspire all who visit to adopt and incorporate them into their lives and worldview. We believe that many Hawaiian values are universal values, and that they benefit not just Hawaii, but our global community. In the last few years, we've been fielding requests from interested young people to reconnect with aina, culture, and community, and find career paths that can bring them back home to serve their community. To meet this need, we've launched multiple internship programs. This series highlights our intern programs, our amazing staff, their journeys through life and to WIPA, and the extraordinary service they offer to our community every day. They inspire me and give me hope for the future of our island and communities. I hope they inspire you. You can find out more about us and reach out at waipafoundation.org. Mahalo nui.
All right, this is great. This is Angela Zussman. It is Wednesday, March 19th, and I'm very happy to be here with Auntie Bobby from WIPA. Auntie, can you please say and spell your full name, please?
Bobby, which is actually I'm actually a Barbara, but I don't resonate with that. Bobby, B-O-B-B-I. And last name is Akana, A-K-A-N-A.
Awesome. Okay, good. I have it spelled right. Very good. Well, we are here as part of the WIPA series talking about the WIPA organization. And you have been recommended to me as someone to talk to who maybe has a little bit different perspective on the organization than some of the other folks that I've been really blessed to be able to speak with over the last several months. So, Auntie, tell us a little bit about, first of all, how did you find WIPA organization and when was that?
You know, I'm not sure of the exact year because it was through my husband. His part of family was Stacy. So that was how it started. And it was probably on a couple of trips here to vacation and just came out here for Boy Day and couldn't handle the bugs and went in the kitchen.
All right, tell me more about that. So you show up for Poi Day, and what is it, you know, what's the feeling? What are you seeing? What are you experiencing?
It was back then, it was in the old Poi Mill side, not in where they are now. There was just a lot of people sitting at tables or with bins and water and hollow, and they were cleaning and washing it. And I did not last long, like I said. I got swarmed by mosquitoes or gnats or something, and can't put bug spray on when you're handling that. So they offered me to go into the kitchen, which is how I ended up in the kitchen and ended up helping cook.
Okay.
The bugs. Super social. Yeah.
All right. So we'll back up for a second. You said that your husband is part of the Sproat family. So talk to me a little bit more about your family connection or your husband's family connection.
So Stacy's mom, who recently passed, was his cousin. And so they grew up together over here on Kauai. They used to spend the summers in Kauai. All the kids would get shipped over here for the summer, for summer work camp at grandma and grandpa's. I've heard a lot of fun stories about that kind of stuff, but that's the initial connection. They're related that way.
Are there any summer fun stories that you can share? And did this summer fun, did this take place right there where WIPA organization is now on that land, or where did it happen?
It was over in Kauai at the bay. So I know that there was a lot of fishing. And at some point fishing was less and it went into farming. But I know that we have a picture of a lot of the cousins together. And I want to say, I'm guessing it's probably 20 or so or more kids, ranging from, you know, he was one of the younger ones, to kids to young adults. And I guess when they weren't having to work, they managed to get into their share of mischief or whatever.
I can only imagine. Any mischievous tales that you can tell?
You know, I know at one point they got up, I think one time they got like, they ran away from home or something with pork and beans at the beach or something. I don't know. But I know that there's just a lot of fond memories and really a lot of familial and emotional attachment to all of that.
Right. And so where were you living at that time?
Oh, at that age, I was on Oahu. Uh-huh.
And yeah. What was that like growing up in Oahu for you? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Hawaii Kai. I want to say I was super timid. Shy is not the word they use these days, but that's how they described me as a kid. But I was an athlete. I swam competitively my growing up years, played tennis, tried different sports. I grew up cooking with my dad, which is where sort of the cooking started to come. He always, like for swim meets and stuff, when we hosted, he always did the hospitality and stuff. So I learned just how to do that kind of stuff and have that appreciation for feeding people.
Wow. Oh, this is interesting. Tell me a little bit more about cooking with your dad. What kind of things did you cook? What kind of recipes did you learn from him?
My dad is Chinese. He's pure Chinese. And so I learned a lot of, sorry, I'm moving just to get away from that, but it stopped. it a lot of Chinese food, just food is love. Feed people. My mom did some cooking when we were growing up, but my dad did a lot of the Chinese kind of cooking. And that's what I pretty much learned from him. I think I started cooking probably pretty early. So that's where all that started with my dad.
Wow, that's neat. Tell me more about Food is Love and how your father kind of transmitted that understanding to you.
You know, it's just a lot of it is comfort foods, and some of it is just taking care of people and nourishing people and providing for them. And not just like at events like that, but even just, you know, sharing for if people need.
And was that something that happened in your home?
Yeah, at different times. But I said I was pretty busy as a kid, so I wasn't always like home all the time because I was at activities. But, you know, it's just there was so much associated with food and comfort, I guess, just even enjoying it, that's what I remember. And I know even like with my sisters, it's kind of we all like to cook. We all like to provide for other people. We like to cook for parties and, you know, be a part of that.
I'm getting hungry, actually, just listening to you. So what are a couple of your favorite recipes that you learned from your father?
Probably things that, some of them are things that probably most people don't care for, but we used to make sweet sour pig's feet, different kinds of stir fries. He has some dishes that he said were my favorite, but they weren't when I found out what they were made of.
Like what?
He used to make a kind of Chinese style beef tongue that I'd never seen it whole. It was always sliced, and it had kind of a soy sauce with Chinese five spice kind of flavor. I can still remember it. That's how much it stuck. But then I saw the raw tongue on the counter one day, and what's that? And he told me, because you love that. No, I don't. I didn't eat it again for probably 40 or 50 years because I just couldn't. And then we had probably one of the last family get-togethers that we had before he got injured. And he helped cook for a Christmas meal. He had told us we were going to have one thing, and then he, as at my sister's, and he said he was making my favorite. And then she goes, I don't know if I should tell you what he's making. And it was that. And I'm like, oh, great. And he's going to want me to eat it. It, you know, it was okay, but it was still hard. It's that mental leap, you know, that was just, I had put an association with it that was not going to work for me.
So did you eat?
I had a piece or two, but it was like, I can't. I let him see me eat it. That was it.
You're like, this is for you, Dad. This is only for you.
Yeah, I can't do this.
Okay, so you had this childhood of growing up with a family that really understood that food is love. You spent time in the kitchen with your dad. It sounds like you had some nice family gatherings. And then fast forward several years, and it sounds like you moved to Kauai at some point. What brought you from Oahu to Kauai?
Actually, there was a jump to Colorado in between. And that was kind of for our kids, kind of for finances, kind of for education reasons. And so we were in Colorado for quite a while. I was there almost a little over 20 years. He was there about 16 years. We moved him back first because we always talked about Kauai. And we moved him back first, trying to make sure that was a good idea. But it was kind of funny because shortly after him getting back here, he told me, he goes, you know, I'm not coming back to Colorado. You know, it worked. We were apart for about 6 years. And I actually stayed at my job. That was partly why I had stayed back, because I had a good job with good benefits. And then I ended up going into, there were a lot of steps to get there, but I ended up going to acupuncture school. I started traditional Chinese medicine over there and was trying to finish it. And I just, it got to the point where it was too hard. And so I actually transferred to the school on Oahu here. And that's when I came back to Oahu. That was in 2018. And so I finished school here. The school let me do some distance learning at the time. And I actually graduated, took my boards. And a week after I received my license in the mail, COVID shut the world down. But I had already been working at Waipaw. I started in Waipaw when I, right after I came back, and I was here on Kauai, when I had gotten over to Kauai. They gave me the job with the Ho'olana summer program. And so I did that for a couple months. And then when it was done, I stopped. And then they brought me back to cook breakfast and lunch for Poi Day. And then the cheesecake started with Stacy doing them, and I started prepping for her, and then I started making them, and then it just kind of
okay. We're gonna build up to that. I know. We got some cheesecake stories coming, y'all. So you moved back to Kauai and you came to Poi Day, couldn't sit outside with everybody because of the bugs. And so we're
before we moved back, though. That was before I moved back.
Okay, so by the time you moved back, we already knew that you weren't going to be sitting outside. So mm-hmm. It was back to the kitchen for you, which was right. Something that you already felt connected to, right? Had you ever thought about cooking professionally?
You know, at one point I did. I thought I wanted to maybe bake. But, you know, you go through, I have said that life goes in circles sometimes, and mine did, you know, from kind of, you know, you go back to what you think you want to do when they're making you decide out of high school. Right. And I was kind of talked out of it because it wasn't, I should have been doing more, something harder. I guess that's the best way to put it. Not to potential, right? Adults telling a teenager what to do. And I listened. And so I found something else to get into. And I discovered after a year I didn't love it, and that was fashion design, because I'd been sewing since I was 8. And so I thought, well, I'll take my hobby, and they were okay with that. And then I decided it was not what I wanted to do. Life kind of went on, and then I ended up wanting to do infant toddler care when our younger daughter was little, because the cost of child care and after school care for our older one, I was bringing home about $100 a month after we paid for all that, right? So I ended up watching kids, which I made a little bit more doing that. And I really loved it, which is what I had wanted to do coming out of high school. So I came back around to it, found it, then ended up in infant toddler Montessori training. And then did that for a lot of years at home, and then ended up making an ice skating costume for my daughter and a friend, and told them not to tell. And I ended up sewing. So I did that for a lot of years, and you know, circles.
Worked that out, huh?
Circles. And then I didn't think I'd ever want it. I didn't, I said I wasn't going to go back to school for anything, that you couldn't make me do that. And, next thing I knew, I got really fascinated with the body and how it works, and ended up going to school for traditional Chinese medicine.
Wow. I'm hearing these threads of your life story, and it feels to me like everything is kind of weaving together to where you are now. Your love mm-hmm. for taking care of young people, healing and the body, of course, mm-hmm. cooking. Yeah. So now what is your role at Waipaw?
It actually has been in transition for the last year. I was in the kitchen. I started out cooking part-time, and then it transitioned into full-time. And at one point before it became totally full-time, I was actually helping watch Stacy's mom at home a little bit. So there was still caregiving in there. And then it became full-time kitchen. And just in the last it's probably been about a year and a half. I had some health things come up. So it's physically, it's a little too much for me to be in the kitchen all the time. So they have very, very kindly helped me transition into the office. So I do emails and phones and connect with people in a different way, which is actually turning out as I'm getting more comfortable with it. I really enjoy that I can connect with people on a different level, but still be able to connect with people. And I'm still getting to cook a little bit, not as much. And that was a process coming to terms with, you know, giving up what I had done so much for so long, but it's all good.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear more about all of these sort of phases. So let's get more into the cooking. Okay. You started off by cooking for the summer camp.
Before we get too much more into this interview, I want to let you know that you're listening to Kauai Community Radio. It's KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and this is an interview presented to us from Story for All, one of our partners at KKCR, and she is speaking with Auntie Bobby. She works at Waipa Foundation. It's part of Story for All's series on Waipa. Let's get back to it. Hopefully. Come on, buddy.
Okay. Well, I'm excited to hear more about all of these sort of phases. So let's get more into the cooking.
Okay.
You started off by cooking for the summer camp.
Yep.
Okay.
So
describe what that's like. For those of us who have never been there during the summer, what are you seeing and hearing and what are you cooking?
that was the last summer that they did that program. And we had set menus for each meal each day. And it repeated every week because every week a different group came in. And so it was just like Monday was the same meals. And I had a couple of Duke interns that helped and a couple of Kupu interns that helped on different days. So there were different pieces of working with other people. And it was learning, I think, across the board on lots of ways, like having someone who didn't know maybe how to do it and teaching. And then also for me doing that volume all the time on a regular basis. But once we got it down and I had the same people for the same meals, it made it much easier and we all kind of got our flows together. But it would be coming in at 5 o'clock and making breakfast and then shuttling it over to the campsite, then coming back and making lunch and shuttling it over to the campsite. And then that would be done. And then on Poi Day, we actually did the group, the breakfast and lunch, as well as provided breakfast and lunch for the Poi Day volunteers. So it was an increased amount of food. I think it was like fried rice for 100 people. it was pretty crazy. And I initially was not used to that volume all the time. So there was a learning curve and process, but it was all things that I knew how to make or could, you know, easily adjust to volume. It was just learning the volume.
I'm trying to picture how big a walk that is that you would use.
It's a big walk. It was, I couldn't carry it when it was full because it was too heavy for me. So it was usually a process of cooking in it and scooping out of it and transferring it to other things.
That's a whole other process, huh?
Yes, it was.
All right, let's talk about some of these Waipa recipes. If there were a set of dishes that for you really are kind of like the essential Waipa dishes, you know, what would they be?
Well, the cheesecake, for as far as what was sold to the public, the cheesecake was the first big one. And Stacy started that one. And it was, like I said, I came into it to do her prep. And then she taught me how, and it has grown incredibly in the quantity that we produce from back then. It's a lot, and it is a staple. It is a sweet. But as I started to work more hours, that's how the other foods came in, because I asked if I could make other things. And the criteria that I was given that was kind of cool was it has to have either white paw ingredients or at the very least a local ingredient in it. And so I think the next thing that came up was I played around with, and I had to learn. It was a learning process to learn how to work with like the kalo, the grated kalo or the poi, because it changes consistency or texture of things. It either dries it out or it makes it gooey. And then there was all the great stuff that our gardens produce, to be able to incorporate those as well. But let's see. So besides cheesecake, back at the beginning, it was the kalo patties. It was a vegetarian kalo patty or corned beef kalo patty, kind of like a chicken nugget, but made with taro and some vegetables and stuff. And then we played around with it, and it was actually Stacy that suggested one day, I had some extra lilikoi in the kitchen, and she said, why don't you put it in the dip? So we made a lilikoi curry dip for those, and that was way back. And the banana bread was one, the vegan banana bread that I played with. And then along the way, it was just some things came in and stayed, and some things came in and were not welcome. They weren't great. The carrot cake has been another big seller. So it's a carrot cake that has kalo in it. And then we went into entrees. We do vegetarian or vegan entrees on Tuesdays, and then an entree on Thursdays that has meat in it. So those are the two, and that we, those are 2 days for main dishes. And otherwise it's cookies or mochi or different kinds of sides or pickled daikon, or, I mean, there's just so many fun things to play with. I think Nicole makes kimchi now. Things that I don't make.
So you got to, your baking, your love of baking, got to tap into that. Let's talk a little bit more about that famous cheesecake. So what are some of the ingredients, and which of those ingredients are local or come from the Waipa farm?
Originally, way back, so the poi is in there. There's poi in there. And at the beginning, there were three flavors. So we would use Waipa limes, or we would use Waipa lime and guava. And then we also used lilikoi. But the quantity became so great that we weren't able to sustain using lilikoi from here or from Stacy's yard. So we do purchase that. And we stopped making the other two flavors because the demand wasn't the same. And so things would not sell. I mean, they were good, but they just didn't. People want the lilikoi. That's the one.
Lilikoi cheesecake.
Yeah.
And there's poi in it. I didn't realize
there's
that.
Poi in it.
That is very unique. So talk to me a little bit more about the recipe and why add poi to cheesecake. What is the, besides the health reasons, what?
No, I was not a part of that process when it started, but my understanding is it, so basically it's a New York style cheesecake that poi has been added to. And Stacy is the one that figured out that process, I believe, along, and maybe some, and someone, I thought someone gave it to her, but I know that she was the one that was fiddling with it, and there were lots of tastings. But it's been consistent now. It is cheesecake and a lot of poi, and then the sour cream topping and the lilikoi on top.
And what happens with this cheesecake? For those listeners who don't know, tell us a little bit about how that cheesecake is made available to the public.
So we bake it 3 days a week, and then it's usually cut sometimes late on that day, otherwise the next day, and it goes out into our grab-and-go honor fridge. So it's an outside fridge that people can come and shop for whatever's in there. Sometimes it's produce, sometimes it's cookies or entrees along with the cheesecake. And there's a honor system, cash and check box out there. People just fill out slips and write down what they bought and stick it in the box. Or they can use Venmo or PayPal. But it's a great piece of, with not just the cheesecake, but all the food. That was a big important piece for me, along with the kind of food is love thing. It was about feeding the community. And we started even before other things went in the fridge, that when after the they had when the flood had happened and the road was closed out here, and the people that lived out there could only go in and out at a couple times a day, and so the convoy was out there. So there were, I know I did one day a week where we would make like plate lunches or plate dinners, and we would sell them to the folks that were out there waiting in the line to go home at dinner time and still had to, you know, cook and deal with their children. And so we did that at one point.
Let's just pause there for a second for some of our listeners who maybe don't know that piece of the history of the North Shore. So tell us a little bit about, you know, when was this, what year, and what happened?
If I recall, it was literally about the time that I moved back onto the island. So it was, I want to say it was April 2018. And there was a lot of, I'm not going to know the right words, but a lot of like the shoreline and stuff, there was loss of infrastructure, I guess. And so people couldn't go out there unless you had to have a permit or you had to live out there or both.
Also, like construction. Past Hanalei, right? There were the 500 year floods, right? There was so much rain, and the roads were swept away. The hillsides were swept away. It's already can be tricky getting in and out of Hanalei, yeah, with the one lane bridge. But past Hanalei, is this where the people were?
It was past Hanalei, but the entry point to get through was just past Waipa at that single lane bridge just past us. And so, or just in front of us on the side. And so that was when that food started. And then the other one, the hillside, that impacted me because I was working here then too. That's terrible. I should remember which year, but it used to impact us because we could only get in and out at certain times. And if you didn't get out, because it happened to me a couple of times in time, I spent the day out here and did not get out until the afternoon opened up again. And they're still working on that hillside. They're actually working on it this week again. It's causing a lot of traffic on the hill.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So at that time, excuse me. So at that time, it sounds like you said there were convoys. So the road, which, you know, the road to get in and out was only open a few times during the day.
Yes.
And if you missed that time, you were stuck.
Yeah, on either side.
Right. Okay. So people, they were either stuck or they were having to wait in this long line to get through the road. Right. And then would you guys go like car to car with food, or did they come into or how did people know about it?
You know, that I don't know. I wasn't around at the time when they were actually out there doing whatever. I don't know if they just had a stand out there or how they did it. I just know that I helped prepare some of it.
And how did that feel? You said earlier, you know, just as important for you as food is love is being able to feed your community. And I know this is really at the heart of Waipa Organization's mission. So talk to me about your piece of that puzzle.
It was being able to, like I said, use the things that we have and make and provide things that were affordable, sometimes more nutritious than others, but affordable. A big piece of it was cost and keeping things reasonably priced so that it could be, you know, so people could eat without having to spend, you know, maybe $20 for a salad. They could spend $8 or something like that, you know. And our prices have gone up over the last couple of years, but costs of goods have also. And so and there's always been the times that we've raised prices. There's always been a lot of discussion about how much and should we, and are we comfortable with that? And can people still afford it? But if you go out into, you know, the market area and look for things, we are still under what's out there, but we also do need to be able to cover costs at the very least.
That makes a lot of sense. And I know,
which is also our livelihood too, right? So that we can afford to live. So they also includes paying us as well.
Right. And I know that with the Waipa Poi, that there's a whole sort of program around that in terms of delivering it around the island and making sure that it's affordable. So talk to me a little bit more about, you know, what does that mean? Why is it so important to you guys that the food that you make and sell be affordable?
I know with the poi, it's to get it on the table so that people are eating it and the different generations are experiencing it as well. So ours is more affordable than what you can buy out there. We sell it here at Waipaa on Poi Day. And then they also deliver to Lihue and Ele'ele on Thursdays as well. And people come out and pick up. Some people have standing orders, and some of it is just, can you get some?
Right. And what are some of the other recipes that you make that are centered around food that's grown by Waipaa?
Going with poi and kalapa'a first, I do a poi mochi. I make a kalo, the grated kalo, coconut chocolate chip macadamia nut cookies.
That sounds delicious. I'm so interested in hearing about all the sweets that you make with kalo.
A lot of sweets. I used to make some pan manju that had kalo and coconut in it. I did a caramelized pineapple with ginger and coconut manju in it. And then the entrees, a lot of the entrees use more of the vegetables that we grow here. So we keep close contact and conversations with the girls that do the gardening and find out what's coming up and what's available that we can use from them. And over time there, they've tried growing different things that I wanted to try to work with, or that now Nicole wants to try to work with. And it just depends, because sometimes things don't grow real well here, right? Or the bugs like them too much or something. But I like working with the daikon. Everything has, even the dishes that are meat forward. I grew up making shoyu chicken. It is shoyu chicken stew now, so it has a lot of vegetables in it. It still has meat, but it's not as meat forward as just being meat. And then we have Buddha bowls, vegetable bowls, different kinds of soups and stews.
What are some of your favorite veggies to work with?
I like to work with a lot of cucumber and daikon. And I like the, our carrots are beautiful. And we get some beautiful green beans too. Sorry, I'm trying to find a place to be.
Oh, sorry. For our listeners, Auntie's on the move here, so.
Someone needed my spot where I was sitting.
Okay, so thank you. I know you're getting yourself settled. You know, I know that farming, it's so interesting to hear about the relationship that you have with the farm, right? And the folks who are growing things, and I love to hear that, you know, they're letting you know what's growing well so you can create recipes around that. You're letting them know about recipes that you want to cook, so they're experimenting with different things in the garden. What kind of surprises or, you know, like mistakes kind of thing that turned into something that you really, really love? Or
I can go all the way back to the banana bread. The first two or three tries was not good.
What happened?
It was too gummy. Too much. The poi just skewed up the recipe a little bit too much. It took a few tries to figure out how to use ratios to make it work out right.
Okay, tell us some of what you learned for our chefs who are listening. What was the key to the amount of poi in the banana bread?
I ended up not putting any poi in the banana bread, is what happened. I just used grated kalo. I took it out, but I used the kalapa grated up and put it in there.
Okay, so zero poi.
Zero poi. So same base product, just not poi, not ground.
Okay, so don't.
Oh, it's just grated.
Just grated. And then what? Mm-hmm. What is
poi
the
grated poi, or liquid? The kalapa. So it's just grating it with a either a vegetable grater or a food processor with a blade. If it's cold, that was another thing I had to learn, was it had to have been, if it was just cooked and you wanted to grate it by hand, that was one thing, but it takes a long time if you're using a quantity. And so I wanted to figure out how to put it through a machine. And so by putting it into the refrigeration for probably about 48 hours at a minimum, that running it through the grater, it still can get sticky, but then you get fine grates. And it works great for by itself with a little bit of onion. You can make like hash browns. You can pick it, put it in a pan and fry it crisp. You can also just slice it and fry it crisp too, which is great. But using it grated, it is much easier to incorporate into things. And sometimes it's still finding a ratio because it can be the different, because it's a product of nature. So just because it's a piece of kalapa doesn't mean it's going to have the same consistency as texture as the one you used last week. And when they give me a bag of it to use, the colors are different. Some are purple, some are white, some have more flecks in them. Some, when I cut them, I can tell they're stickier or they're a little drier. And depending on what you're making, sometimes that consistency can impact the recipe. But mostly, once I played with things, I could figure out the ratio that worked well. And it didn't really matter what the consistency of it was, if that makes sense.
I mean, this is a chemistry lesson we're getting here.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a single plant, right, kalo, but the different
varieties.
One is different. Yeah. Is that true for other vegetables?
Not so much carrots or beans, or the daikon. Maybe the cucumbers a little bit, depending on the variety of the cucumber. Some have more seeds and some don't, you know, like the English varieties. They've gotten really good at growing small tomatoes. I don't know if they're grape or different variety. I don't know the varieties. Sometimes they're bigger than others, but they're not the big like beefsteak kind of tomatoes. They're smaller. I think the kalapa is probably the most fickle, only because of how we use it. And like I said, there was a lot of learning curve, but everything, you know, anything that comes out of the earth is a product of nature and can be different, you know, whether it's smaller or sweeter or harder or a little softer. But if it's not being used in a manner that affects consistency, I guess, it doesn't really affect it the same way.
And why add kalo to these recipes?
Because we have it right here. It's so plentiful. And it was easy to get. It's easily available. And it is so versatile. From sweets to savory, you know, to all by itself. It's just a great thing to be able to use. Sometimes you can taste it in it and sometimes you can't. It's like with the cheesecake. If you know what poi tastes like and you savor that bite, especially if it's not cold, like if it's come down in temperature a little bit or warmed up a little bit, the taste is more predominant than when it's cold. In the cookies, I think sometimes I can tell it's there because of texture, but I can't really taste it. So it kind of depends. I know like right now with the food tours, they're using the grated kalo and they're kind of pan frying it, kind of hash brownish with some kind of sauce. And they're putting it in spring rolls as a filling instead of meat. So You know, it just, it's being, be open and be curious, right? We use a lot of ulu the same way. Ulu has become, is a great staple. We use it as potatoes. We use it as filler in salads. We use it in soups. The great substitute it is, it works like a potato. And so we have end up with a lot of that in the freezers during ulu season or after. And so we use it for a lot of different things.
And for folks who don't know what ulu is.
Oh, breadfruit. And there are varieties of that too that are grown at Waipa. So when they come through and we have to process them, it's like, are those the ones with the big seeds? I want the ones with the no seeds. Because you know, because we cook them and cut them apart and have to break them down when they have these big seeds, and then they have this kind of like a, it's not really a shell, but like a harder, not harder, but not a chewable kind of coating where the seed sits that you have to kind of pick out if you don't want that in your food.
And is it similar like with the ulu, with the kalo, that they're healthy, they're available?
Yeah.
So, but there's a deeper reason, right, for including these food items, I would guess, for the reason that they're staples of the Hawaiian culture.
This is true. And they are nutritious. They're definitely in the carbohydrate family. But like for me personally, I can eat the kalo when it's not poi. And I just can't eat very much of it. But if I eat poi, although they say it's very good for people with diabetes, for me, because everybody's different, it spikes my blood sugar. So that's where I sit with that. So I also don't eat a lot of ulu for that reason. But like right now, when it's, if they pick it and it's really ripe, it's very soft. It's got kind of a funk. But Nicole makes this awesome chocolate mousse out of it and makes dessert out of it, as opposed to using it in something savory.
Sounds like there's a lot of creativity in that kitchen.
There is. We have, you know, there's, it's a lot, it is a lot of fun, a lot of work. And that was why I said, you know, wait, before I kind of moved into the office area, I, you know, great people around here, great people that I work with. And whenever I interacted with them, it was wonderful. But I, for a long time, worked by myself or with, I had help, but I mean, I worked by myself a lot, and so I wasn't out with a crew doing something.
You were making love. You were making magic with love in it in the kitchen. I'm
feeding the people.
Yeah, feeding yourself, feeding your soul, feeding the people. Talk to me a little bit about the food tours at Waipa.
You know, I don't have a lot of interaction with them, but we started those late last year, middle last year. They do them 3 days a week. It's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I know that they've recently gone through a little bit of tweaking with what they're serving and maybe what exactly they're covering while they're out on their tour. But they up to 10 people usually, and for local as well as tourists visiting and learn about, you know, learn about us, learn about our land, learn about some of our food. And I know that they do get a small breakfast, maybe a tasting and a lunch. Then they go out and about.
Well, I have been fortunate enough to attend one of those tours, and it is absolutely delicious. I mean, everything about Waipa is, to me, very, very special. Every part of the tour is special. It's so unique to be able to see where the food is grown and then go taste the many ways that that food can be used in different recipes. That Lilikoi dipping sauce you were talking about is so good. I got to try that. And it's really special. And again, I feel like there's, yes, it's delicious. It's a great way to have a wonderful day, you know, but there's something, again, deeper to me about it, like an almost spiritual experience of being able to really value what it is that the land, you know, this partnership between humans and the land and plants and nature. We're nourishing each other. So is that kind of in your mind, or do you have any experiences around that being so closely associated with these beautiful, you know, things coming from nature and turning it into food?
I think that is, I mean, not like something I can just like pull out of my head and say, but that's why I've been able to do what I have done for as long as I've been doing it, I guess. And just always, like I said, it's been hard transitioning out of the kitchen to some degree, because I don't do that as much now, or definitely not as much, and not with the variety. There just isn't time. I still bake cheesecakes. I still do that on Sundays. That's my day. I don't know. It's just such a special place. Driving in here, I mean, I come in the dark usually, 5 a.m. ish, and get out here earlier than other people mostly. But and usually on Sundays I'm by myself. There's not usually anybody else working on a Sunday. Stacy might come around and do stuff, but I don't necessarily see her. I might see her vehicle somewhere, but I don't see her. It's kind of independent, which I don't mind as well. Get to be at one with my surroundings. We're just tucked into this little lovely spot that, like, today it's raining, and when I came out of the kitchen to come over here, there was a rainbow that was going down across the front of the hillside over the trees, and you know, it's just beautiful.
Thank you for tuning in today to Kauai Community Radio. And I want to let you know that you're listening to Talk Story Radio. This is a Story for All and KKCR partnership. And this is a pre-recorded interview that we have with Auntie Bobby from Waipa Foundation. And we are very honored and pleased to present this. Storytelling is great work that we can do with partnerships like our partnership with Story for All. And amplifying these projects, these messages, these voices is a very special thing that community radio can do, and only community radio really does for small communities. So thank you for that. And I am personally very pleased to do projects like this. Thanks for tuning in this morning. It's 10 o'clock here on the Garden Island. And
here, there was a rainbow that was going down across the front of the hillside over the trees. And, you know, it's just beautiful.
If you could express gratitude for Waipa organization, what would you say?
Thank you. Mahalo. It's just such a gift to the community, and to be able to work here is a gift too. And to be able to be a part of that sharing.
And what is your hope for Waipa as we move into the, look forward into the future?
To continue to grow and be able to preserve what we're doing and expand on it. There's so many young people, which I am not, but that have come through here at different times and are coming back. I think it's just awesome. And there's just, you know, they're still nurturing that youth. And so hopefully, you know, we'll continue to be around and they'll be able to have their turn too, do their impact on us and the world because of that, right?
Yeah, say more about that. You know, this isn't really just about what's happening in this tiny corner of Kauai. It's bigger than that.
Oh, I don't know. It just came out of my mouth because that's what made sense. You know, so many things start as small pieces, right? And you don't know who or when you're going to learn something from somebody, whether it's a small child. So I'm a firm believer in lifelong learning, because you don't know. I mean, heck, I went back to school at 54. but I do. I think, you know, a small child could say something that just hits the right place. And if they say it to the right person, or it gets repeated in the right direction, that maybe it'll impact somebody else somewhere.
And by bringing the generations together, I mean, that's something else that really impresses me about Waipa, is that you see the littlest of the little. You've got mm-hmm. your aunties and uncles. There's a place for everybody, and that multi-generational mixing, it feels so natural there. And what's the value of that, do you think?
It's part of being open. You never, like I said, you never know who you're going to learn from or when you're going to hear something that resonates. And you know, and sometimes people say stuff and you go, and then other times it's like, wow, that just hit. Or 3 weeks later, something comes up and you go, oh my goodness, that fits. Right. So like I said, you just never know. You just have to be open.
It sounds like you're staying open and you're also putting yourself in a place where this kind of magic happens.
Yeah, this place is special. Absolutely.
Anything else you want people to know about Waipa?
I think there's just such, how do I say this? There's just so much respect here for so many different people and the land.
What looks like just maybe a calo plant, you know? I don't know. It's just, it's, I don't know. Sorry. Can't find my words for that. It's a special place. Come check us out.
Enough said. Anything else you want to add?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so we can try some of your recipes at the fridge, right? The honor fridge. And if you're going to take things from that fridge, please pay, right?
Yes, please.
You're keeping prices as low as you possibly can, so everyone can please be respectful of that. And just encouraging people to, that here we are. Here we are. So you can check us out.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you. So much for all that you do to support the community. Anything else you want to say before we close for today?
No, I don't think so.
Thank you so much, Auntie Bobby. It's been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Kauai Community Radio. That again was Story for All's pre-recorded interview with Auntie Bobby as part of the Waipa Foundation focus that they've been doing, that Story for All has been doing. And Angela Zussman is the contact there. She's our partner. And if you want to learn more about Story for All, you can head to storyforall.org and see what their mission is, their purpose. But what they've been focusing on is land stories on Kauai for a couple of years now that we've been doing their broadcasts, and it's been very cool. If you have an idea of someone that you want to connect with Angela so that we can tell their stories, do give me a call here at 826-7774, or you can email me, better yet, at gm@kkcr.org, and we can see about connecting you with Angela. And now I'm going to see what our local headlines are for the Kauai. And then I have an interview coming up at 10:30. Do you remember Oki Diner here on Kauai? So the folks at Oki Diner are changing up their menu, and they're going to talk about it a little bit. Oki Diner is just one of those foundational restaurants out here. And Auntie Barbara and Auntie Ilima are going to just kind of talk about like some of the old classic favorite Hawaiian cuisine, like turkey tail and oxtail. And so we're going to see what's happening over at Oki Diner. But April is Tsunami Awareness Month in Hawaii. The Kauai Emergency Management Agency and other emergency management partners across the state are promoting public awareness and preparedness in recognition of April being Tsunami Awareness Month. You can learn more about that at kauai.gov/kema. That's K-E-M-A. So the Hawaii State Department of Education Safety, Security, and Emergency Preparedness Branch, that's a lot, produced a video which provides a brief introduction of how a tsunami is generated, different types of tsunamis, and signs of a local tsunami. That is very interesting. So you can check that out by going to this press release at the kauai.gov. I can also send you the link if you want to email me at gm@kkcr.org. And I think that I'm going to put a link to this video on our website. There's a show we call Stay Safe Kauai. You can hear it on the third Friday of every month. And I think that I will put it on that show page that you can see the special archives from Stay Safe. And then you'll also be able to watch this video about Tsunami Awareness Month. That is a good idea. We also have nothing else today. How wonderful that we don't have a whole lot of news coming out of the county today. That must mean, you know, no news is good news, right? So thanks for tuning in to Kauai Community Radio, and I'll be back shortly. You can hear us live here. You can always listen to KKCR online at kkcr.org. We also have an app. You can find us streaming there as well. We have our 24/7 Hawaiian stream that you can listen to all of our Hawaiian music archive updates there. We're constantly adding music to the archive, and for more good stuff, visit our website. So we're always working on that. Coming up at KKCR, we have a marathon fundraiser. The marathons are so much fun, where it's just 24 hours of a specific genre of music. And this one's going to be a reggae marathon. So Reggae Rasta Radio is going to be playing on 420. It's a Sunday. It is aptly reggae day here at KKCR, and you are invited to support public media and just listen to reggae all day long. And that is on 420. Of course it is, next month. Stay tuned for more details on that. We have some pretty cool prizes, and we're still debating all of the prizes that we can give away. So what does that mean? Awesome stuff is what that means. Thanks for listening to KKCR.
The KKCR community calendar is announced at 7:30 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. every day.
And you know what?
If you have any,
it's not 7:30 or 2:30 p.m. at all. So let's listen to something else.
Well, this is Barbara Oakey. I've been a teacher for 25 years, and it turned out that I enjoy also having a restaurant. And when I met Auntie Lilima, gosh, Auntie Lima, your cooking is so awesome. So really, we are inviting the whole Kauai to come enjoy the most, well, I can't say it, but it is delicious local food.
We are non-commercial radio, so we have some constraints.
Rivera, oh, this is so wonderful. God bless you, folks. We love the people of Kauai, and especially you. May the Lord bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you, Auntie. Thank you for talking with us on the radio, too, and giving us some local flavor, too. Auntie Ilima, I know that you are also a musician, just like your dad.
Yes.
And I have a copy of your CD. I have a Christmas album of yours, and then I have another album of yours as well. And I would love to play one or two of your songs right now. Do you have some requests that I can play?
Do you have my Blue Canoe CD? I think you do.
I think that I do. I don't know the name of it.
Oh,
just for how it looks where I'm at.
Well, on my Winds and Colors CD, there's Colors of the Wind, and it's a song that I adapted from the movie Pocahontas.
Oh.
So it is really heartfelt, the words that I composed to the song.
It's called
And it
Colors
really means
wind.
A whole lot deeply in my life. If you can find also I wanted an upbeating song, but it's on my Blue Canoe CD. It's Aloha kuipo kuho maka ona ona noho iki kua hihi kuhoa.
Oh, I love it so much. What do I don't think I have the Blue Canoe. I have
Do you have...
Oh, I do have blue kudu. I have Eku Kanaka Meka Ikaika.
Oh, yeah. Be Strong as a Warrior. I wrote that.
Oh, really? Yeah. And of Kekuini Onakoa.
Kekuini Onakoa, Queen of the Warriors.
Okay.
There's a hidden message to that, but Eku, Kuho is upbeat and happy, and we're happy to have
Kuho'a.
Barbara Oki with her... Yeah, with her... new menu coming up March 31st, so please, you all be there.
Okay, so let me play a
few. If you miss the 31st, you still can come in, you know?
Right, it'll be the new menu at Oki Diner, and that is in Kukui Grove Shopping Center in the food court there, and it is one of Kauai's older restaurants, and really a strong a cooking of local food here on Kauai. So we appreciate that so much. And so I'm going to play a few of your songs, Auntie Ilima, and I'm really happy that you called. Thank you.
Thank you so much, KKCR. We love you all, and God bless everyone.
Okay.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. Thank you for calling in. So that is Auntie Ilima and Auntie Barbara Oki calling from Oki Diner. And I wanted to play some of